Hello, I'm Paul Scott. Today I'm talking to Mark Cambridge, CEO of Zytronic, ticker ZYT. Shares are listed on London's AIM market. The shares are currently £4.19, which gives a market cap of about £56 million. Quick disclaimers, I've not charged a fee to do this interview. I do hold shares personally, and I'm not giving advice or recommendations. Okay, so welcome, Mark.
Hi, Paul. Hope you're okay.
Yeah, not too bad. So let's start by asking you to give an introduction to Zytronic for people not familiar with the company.
Yeah, I mean, Zytronic has been around since 2000. It was listed on the AIM market in June 2000. It's pretty much over the 15-year period been developing and concentrating on a unique touch sensing product for the display markets, and has spent 15 years really of growing that product and technologies into various different market applications and uses, spread across a number of different global geographies, to a point now where we have turned over just shy of £18 million in touch revenues and just over £21 million of total product revenues, and exported roughly about 95% of the revenues.
Right, okay. Are you affected by Forex movements generally then, being a large exporter?
Well, I mean, not all of our exports are in currency. We do transact in three primary currencies, obviously the major one being sterling still, and roughly half of our exports are still in sterling. But we do have exposure to US dollars and euros. From a hedging position, we are generally naturally hedged more in euros than we are in dollars. But we are exposed at both the sales line and the purchasing line to movements in both currencies. The business pretty much have tried to run at net currency stability. So we're not looking to make profits based on currency, and we're certainly not looking to see the business significantly lose profits as a consequence of currency. So to mitigate part of that, in 2014, the business did make a policy decision to put forward contracts in to handle our dollar and surplus euros at least 12 months out as a minimum, and possibly as far as 18 months out, depending upon what the exact prevailing rate was on a month-by-month basis as we were looking to extend the contracts. So it was ability to get us to a net currency position.
By net currency, presumably you mean sort of neutral.
Well, so
whatever exchange rates do.
I mean net neutral. Yeah, you're quite right.
Yeah.
What I would say is in the 2015 numbers, we didn't achieve net neutrality. There is overall a 100K charge to profits.
Right. Okay.
In 15. Now, that's as a consequence of that we, at the margin level and direct cost level, we were 180K gain on loss of currency, but because of the month-to-month market movements and the forward contracts that we have in place, we actually were £300,000 loss on the overhead line. So the net effect was a £100,000 charge.
Yeah, which I think in the context of £4.5 million profit is not material, is it? Most people are pretty relaxed about it.
I mean, I think we felt when we put the policy in to begin with that we knew there was either going to be a lot of pain or gain in that very first 12-month period.
Oh, I see, yes.
But once it was in and one's maintaining the policy, then the smoothing really starts to transact out. And in a sense, that's what we saw that by the end of the year, and it's continued along that vein.
Yeah, oh, that's encouraging. I'm just picking up one point you made at the beginning of this section. You said something quite interesting, that you export over 90% of your product, but 50% of it is billed in sterling. Did I get that right? I mean, that's really interesting. So
go on, Paul, sorry.
I was just going to say, you export, but you actually bill the overseas customers with a sterling invoice by the
same. Well, I mean, I think in general terms, for the business and protection of the business, we try to do everything in sterling. But obviously, from a commercial standpoint, one can't prevail that all of the time. and therefore when we do have to move, we'll either move dollars or euros, but we don't want to necessarily put ourselves exposed to that, those currencies.
Yeah. Okay, that's great. That's very reassuring. So moving on to the results briefly then in general, I won't go through all the numbers because people can see those for themselves. The announcement was on 8th of December. I mean, really good results. Profit up 39% to $4.5 million for the year. I mean, do you want to really brief us on the main factors that caused that good performance?
And I think the drive is always improving revenues, but for Zitronic, it's as much movement in revenues on the touch is the primary driver, and the mix of those products that we could be manufacturing in touch. I mean, one thing regarding the nicheness of the technologies that we manufacture is we can utilize that technology in producing products that's 5 inches in size as readily as we can produce products which are 85 inches in size. You know, they run through the same manufacturing conditions, using the same personnel, using exactly the same equipment, with a little bit of variability, obviously, in the material content. That's the one linear link between size. So although revenues in totality for the business grew 13%, the underlying touchscreen growth was 16%. And one of the main drivers was that we saw the greater products that we produce over 30-inch size. We've done 50% more in 15 than we did in 14.
So although they're higher margin, aren't they, as well, the big screens?
A better margin product. I mean, I would often say that for a business of our ilk, we don't do things which any touch product, which one would call as poor margined product. You know, even the small size product is not poor margined product. But there is a difference between the margins that we get from our touchscreen products and the margins that we get from the products which are not touchscreen. And the non-touchscreen products have a lower margin than the touchscreen products. And therefore, they create a margin anchor, a margin drag a little bit in the totality of the touchscreen products. But they are very much stable, cash-generative business.
Mm-hmm.
So I think, you know, ultimately for the business, seeing the margin movement that we actually got up to just shy of 42% was obviously a great move for the business, and one that if people have been listening to our story over a number of years, we always said that getting into the 40% for a business of our ilk was a driving goal.
I was just going to say that, because I think the first time, you and I chat about every 6 months, don't we, after initially meeting 2 or 3 years ago at, I think it was Buchanan's offices, and I remember you did say specifically, this is about getting the margins up to about 40%, and really good to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's as a business of our nature, being bespoke and variable, you know, achieving those sort of margins, it ought to have been a goal for that business, but I think one should always bear in mind the relationship, obviously, between margins and then the profitability that consequently comes off it. You know, and arguably, there's no doubt that, you know, customers and suppliers look at your margins and also look at your net profitability and question whether or not they can improve their pricing or improve their costing.
Yes, that's a good point.
You know, so
yeah,
I think. Yeah. But one's always got to take a commercial view over what you're achieving, that's all in mind. I think with the mix of what we're seeing going on, we ought to be, you know, the goal is obviously once attaining this level of margin is at least maintaining it. And we've been fairly successful as we've seen significant movements in the margins of being able to maintain them once we've brought them in. But, you know, once we're into these low 40%, it's going to become more and more difficult to look for fairly levels of significant margin growth that we've seen in the past.
Yeah, I see. So it's more about sales, maintaining margins, but driving the sales growth from now on, then, is it? Is that fair to say?
Yeah, it's sales. It's maintaining the margin and trying to get growth where we can in the margins, and the variability will allow that. But it's also getting the mix of the products right. And I go back to talking about mix. I mean, only 6% of our products were of multi-touch type. Our multi-touch types. You know, it's not a great deal. It's not a great deal of our products which are of the high-end, margin-generating side. you know, only 11% of our products were above 30 inches. You know, it's not vast numbers, but significant. We don't need a big uplift in those volumes of the big sizes that we do to compensate for slight falls in the smaller sizes because of the margin benefits that we get.
Yeah, I see. I mean, one of the reasons I like the shares is because I'm starting to notice out and about, you know, in airports, in car showrooms and things, large touchscreen advertising displays are starting to appear.
Yeah.
And, you know, you've got other products like the curved screen that you've developed for gaming and so on. So, I mean, do you see us being at a sort of a nice stage of growth for these products with more and more of them? You know, is your market going to be getting a lot bigger, do you think, for these products?
I think we've often sort of said, I don't think generally what we're doing is creating anything which is dramatically transformational. I think what we've got is the ability for good growth ahead of expected market growth. And in our particular markets, expected market growth is really 10-12%-ish marks. Mm-hmm. And we've been certainly running ahead of that, because the key really is not what is the market growing by, it is what is the new market growing by. Because it's all about being the person that is designed in to these products. You know, once you're designed in, and the design cycles in some instances, well, are 2 years on average, and depending upon the complexity and newness of it, it could be 3 or 4 years before one actually starts seeing production values coming from it. But once you're designed in, the on costs of designing you out are fairly substantial. So it's all about being the person that's designed in. And I think we very much punch our weight in the new design in growth that's going on as a consequence of the broad breadth of offerings that we can do with the products.
Well, that's quite interesting. So although your order visibility has tended to be quite short in the past,
As far as production orders to be built at the time, I would say visibility is short. But sitting behind all of that, providing, I would say, levels of clarity, not necessarily levels of accuracy, but certainly clarity, is what we call our opportunities log, our project. Mm. And, you know, it's that which is constantly being refreshed, updated, monitored, that basically provides the clarity of what could possibly be happening in 6 months, 12 months, 24 months.
I see. Yeah, so you've got sort of short-term variability, but generally you can see where the trend is going for the orders, I would imagine.
Yes, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Let's go over actually loads of questions from readers, so let's launch into these next, if we may.
Yeah.
Phil asks, I'd be interested to hear about the competition from the big electronics firms. What does Zitronic have that Panasonic or Sony or a Chinese firm would find difficult to replicate?
Well, I would say it's a good question, and I would say Zitronic wouldn't classify itself in the world of the Panasonic and the Samsungs and the LGs. What you're seeing in the marketplace is the combination of these big people trying to drive new opportunities and volumes, where they are integrating at display level the touch and selling out as a complete unit, which then spawns itself into, I would class it as sort of the OEM third market, which is people don't want to be buying the standards that's going to come from these companies, and want the ability to build their own unique niche bespoke solution. And in doing that, you want to buy the monitor that you want to buy, and you want to buy the touch solution that you want to buy in the configuration that you want them, and marry them up at the same time. And
it's
that marketplace where Zitronic is residing, rather than sitting there saying, we've got to battle the Panasonic line that has been launched into the marketplace.
Yeah, so it's more bespoke and lower volume, your markets, essentially.
Yeah, and certainly, obviously, on the face of it, better margined.
Yes. Yeah, okay. Actually, there's another product question here from Gus. He says, I read with interest that a Zitronic screen had recently been used by a UK optician, Kite GB, to allow customers to post a real time on social media pictures of them wearing new frames, etc.
Yeah.
He said, do you see this as a one-off gimmick or an idea with wider applications?
Well, I would say everything that Zitronic initially gets involved with in a lot of forms could be classed as a one-off gimmick until they get to the point where there's more expectation of these things being used more widely by the marketplace. I mean, we're a component supplier, so we're enabling these things to happen at that sort of stage, with then the expectation that some of these things will then roll into bigger produced items. I mean, you see touchscreens all of the time now in doctor's surgeries for queuing systems, for instance.
Mm.
Now, obviously, we do a lot of queuing-based systems for companies that they're not necessarily doctor's surgeries. You know, it's a marketplace that goes. We've done mirrored-based systems for people that are looking at sort of retail environments where they're looking at themselves in clothes in the mirror and then taking a snapshot of it. So it's sort of, if you take that one example, it's a potential use of it that could be re-added into lots of different applications of the same type. You know, do people want applications where in some instances it's a mirror, and then in other instances it's a visible display that you can interact with, and the optician is just one example of it.
Okay, so really you're driven by what your customers want, essentially.
We're driven in combination by what our customers are wanting in some instances, and also what we're seeing as the market trends that may well be required in the size configurations that we can offer that some other people can't offer, and therefore we drive to bring in on sort of, say, the big panels, for instance, what people are used to seeing on a tablet that the producers of the tablet screens couldn't make happen on a big screen.
Okay. So it sounds like you know the genuine technological advantages with your system over other competing touchscreen technologies. Is that fair to say?
I would say, yeah. I mean, we fall under the umbrella of what everybody calls projected capacitance. I mean, Zitronic termed that phrase back in 2001 as a marketing tool to introduce everybody to our products. And it has been widely accepted in the marketplace as a coined phrase for technologies that you would find Apple using and Samsung using on tablets and smartphones and things you're now seeing going into all-in-ones. But they're very much driven off a technology that has come out of the mouse pads on laptops, you know, which in essence are just being made transparent and are driven by the same entities that you would driven by the same chips and entities. More advanced, but the same entities that you would find on those mouse pads, where the materials. If you look at the various aspects of the materials, you have metallic coatings, which is what these guys are using, and you can improve the performance and increase sizes by going to what the market would class as sort of silver nanowires, or looking at graphene, or these microfine metal mesh type of solutions is a sort of a resistance improvement which allows you to improve the sizes that you can do, to then move to a more pure copper electrode system, which is what we have. I mean, we have by far the more stable and widely ranging material solution in the marketplace, but the processes to manufacture it do not lend themselves to any form of mass production.
Oh, okay.
So although we technically are standing there, we are with the solutions that we have are geared towards producing more bespoke niche solutions.
Okay, well that sounds good, because I suppose that helps maintain a competitive advantage.
I think it maintains a competitive advantage and provides a sort of more of a clear clarity in the focus that's necessary in the markets that you operate.
Okay. I've had about three questions from Graham. Somebody's just called themselves FH and Goldsmithy, and they've all basically asked about patents. So I'm wondering if we could roll that into one. Probably if you just give us a brief overview on the third party element of the patents and patents generally. Hopefully we can cover all three questions in one go.
I know it's a question that's often been asked of Zitronic in various forms, but you know, Zitronic has never hidden the fact, going back to original documentation, that the original touch technology that Zitronic was manufacturing products and still does to this day was a license from a third-party patent holder, a UK-based person, way back in 1999-2000 on patents that he had filed in 1995. And, you know, subsequent to Zitronic taking the license, I would say what ultimately has happened in the 15 years that we have been doing them is that Zitronic has put a lot of developing IP into the manufacturing processes, the electronics, the firmware, the linking software to the host PC, which are a Zitronic owned IP that are not related to the original patents in any form.
Oh, I see.
But the original were technology patents around how you would run a projected capacitive system. And I think the thing to bear in mind for everybody is that, and as I tell a lot of people, is that patents are a novel idea at the point of them being taken out. And that novel idea is protected for 20 years and 20 years only. You know, you do not get it forever in a day. And, you know, if your patent is still novel at the end of the 20 years, well, life and technology still hasn't necessarily moved on very far. And I think in most instances, it hasn't. But what you cannot do is you can't re-patent an original idea again. So it's always got to be moving forward. So although Zitronic had the technology under license and it was imparting a lot of IP into it, the IP it was generating was needed to be self-held. It wasn't information that we wanted to try and patent around things, and didn't want to overly reveal how we were doing certain things and improving things to the world.
Yes, I've heard that. So some companies have said that putting patents out just educates the competition.
Well,
you don't
have to do much to sort of say that you're doing something that's just outside the patent scope. You know, here, a little tweak there, and basically you're not doing exactly the same, but the outcome could be the same.
Okay, so you've got a lot of internal know-how, and with the original patents at 1995, then they must be expiring round about now, are they?
Well, they expired during 2015, and again, we told everybody that that's what was happening in when we put the interims out in 2015.
Sorry, I must have missed that.
obviously, for us, what it meant at that time was the license agreement was tied to the life of the patents, and therefore the license agreement came to its natural conclusion.
And oh, I see. Okay.
As a consequence, you know, we continued to provide our product into the marketplace that arguably did not have patent protection, but was obvious was still Zitronic's product and owned by Zitronic.
Oh, I see.
Zitronic. Now, I think what a lot of other people have then picked up on was that in 2012, as part and parcel of looking at developments within the business, we not only was imparting IP into that existing patented technology at the time, we also looked at different technical methodologies of actually doing things, which were completely different from that original patent, which are patents that Zitronic themselves took out in 2012. We put six in for filing in 2012, and four of them were granted in 2015.
Mm-hmm.
So the new product, when Zitronic is referring to its multi-touch technology or its MPCT product, that is patented technology which is owned by Zitronic.
I see. So overall, it sounds like your position re-patents is now probably better than it has been for a long time. Is that a fair conclusion?
Yeah, I think a lot of people were questioning, but from an internal perspective, we were never nervous about the fact that the patent life was coming towards an end, because we understood the level of IP and development that we had ended up putting into the whole thing to commercially make this a viable item over the 15-year period.
I see. Okay. No, that's brilliant. I can just mark off three questions on my list as having been answered. We've covered all of those, so that's good. Okay, moving on then. Somebody's asked here three questions. First one on the patent, so we've covered that. Second one, this is from Goldsmithy. He's saying, are you seeing any slowdown in sales in China as a result of the economic slowdown over in that area?
I think it's always an interesting question regarding slowdown in sales for Zitronic, because we didn't necessarily see recessionary effects when everybody else was seeing recessionary effects back in 2008 through to 2012. I think we're a little bit lagging on these type of things because of that project gestation period we were talking about being 2 to 3 years, or 2 years on average. And a lot of what we sell into is OEM work. So we're selling to equipment builders at componentry level. But those pieces of equipment will be forming part of a much bigger capital spend program or project that either have already been funded and will go ahead, or are getting to the stage where they will be delayed because funding can't be sought, which starts towards the end of an economic slowdown cycle. So at this very moment in time, you know, we did £1.9 million worth of sales in 2015 into China, and we did £1.9 million worth of sales into 2014, and we're not necessarily expecting to see much of a significant change in that region as we're going forward at this moment in time. In fact, from an investment point of view, most people are probably aware that we've actually invested in a representative sales office based in Taiwan to basically better drive the sales proposition and business development proposition in the Greater China area going forward. So from a business perspective, we're actually investing into the region rather than necessarily seeing or at this moment in time worrying about a slowdown.
Okay. Someone else asks, this covers two questions actually, I currently hold Zitronic shares in my grandchildren's JISAs. Where do you see your company being in 7 or 8 times when the kids will have access to the JISAs?
Oh, I think that's a difficult question to answer, if I'm being honest. I've got no idea how regulations may or may not change. Obviously, the business is intending to continue to grow. We'll add and bolt on as needed to maintain that level of growth. We'll internally develop to maintain that.
By bolt on, Mark, what do you mean, acquisitions of other
companies?
Well, no,
not necessarily acquisitions, but different applications if necessary. I mean, from a development perspective, a business development perspective, it's very much business as usual and as usual going forward. I think we hide our light under the bushel a little bit, because under the bonnet there's always a lot of things going on, the curved screen, encrypted, looking at having the technology do a bit more than it does at this moment in time, which on the face of it may look as if there may be transformational, but it's very much business growth as usual for us. It's to ensure that we've got product offerings that the marketplace will be needing and necessarily wanting going forward. Not talking about acquisitions. I mean, we're often tasked with, are we looking actively at acquisitions? We've never said that we wouldn't look at an acquisition, and I've never said that there hasn't been things that, on the face of it, have come across our path every now and then. But as a business, we've very much driven hard to get the business where it is, to be developing the level of profitability that it's producing under its own steam, and to look at sort of risking that as a cash injection or a cash purchase of something in the vain hope that we'll be able to turn it into something is not something that we would want to expose the cash or the risk of the business to. So it'd have to be pretty much an investment, if anything was to happen, in something that was additive immediately rather than sort of would be sucking things out. But those acquisitions just haven't come across the pipeline at this moment in time. I mean,
okay. Never say never, I suppose.
I would say never say never, because obviously we're a very good cash generative business, and therefore we have cash to enable ourselves to go and do various things if the opportunity was to raise. And that opportunity may be that at some point we've got volume of economies of scale to look to manufacture in a different territory, for instance, in support of territorial growth. You know, and having the cash there to enable us to just go and invest in that obviously is a cold comfort.
Yeah, okay. Because another Aaron asks about the cash pile as well, and he's saying, you know, obviously that's rising every year, now up to 9.8 million. So he asks again about acquisitions, which we've covered. But, I mean, the other obvious use of the cash is a special dividend, isn't it, or share buyback?
I mean, there's special dividends, the share buybacks, there's those sort of things. And the board is reviewing those situations all of the time under the basis of what we're expecting our cash flows to be. I mean, we've been very cash generative this year, even though most of our costs have actually gone up. We paid more out in dividends, we paid more to the tax man, we paid more capex out in the underlying development of the business. You know, but yes, the cash has been converted very well into profits and has converted into reserves. But I think everybody, you know, the people need to look at the numbers a little bit closer, and you know, the cash number, although increasing, is not matching the distributable reserves in the business. So there is a reasonable chunk of undistributable reserves in the reserves that necessarily would not facilitate us handing all of the cash out as dividends.
I see. I mean, that can be dealt with through the court, can't it? I mean, you can reclassify reserves as distributable. Yeah.
Various forms and on the face of it, but it's not something at this moment in time with what we're looking to do, because we are progressively moving the dividend policy on, and I'm fairly certain that, you know, your readership and listeners are probably fairly thankful that, you know, we've moved the dividend substantially 20% this year.
Yeah, and I think it's worth pointing out as well, in the 1 year where you did have a bad year, you maintained the dividend fully, didn't you? So that's the nice
benefit of having the cash and the reserves that we've actually got, that we're able to do that, because I think, you know, you've mentioned it previously in some of the notes that I've seen from you. You know, there is obviously always a risk element in a low visibility business that's project driven in our form. But you know, I think those type of things, even when they materialised, 2013 was a prime example of it, they're usually fairly spiky but short-lived, because it's not a nature shift in the business when things like that happen. It's just it's a couple of one-off events.
Yeah, that makes sense. Okay. I think that's probably covered nearly everything people have asked, because we've probably overrun our time a bit. I mean, have you got any sort of closing remarks that you want to make, Mark?
No, I think, you know, thanks for the opportunity to speak to you.
You're welcome.
I think everybody, you know, it's business as usual, and you know, 2016 has started off at a pace that's ahead of what 2015 started off at.
Good. So you're feeling reasonably relaxed, well, not relaxed, but comfortable about the outlook.
Yeah, I'm hoping to have a good Christmas and New Year.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay, Mark. Well, thanks ever so much for your time. Really appreciate it. And we'll probably catch up after the interim results then.
Yes, we will do. Most certainly.
Righto. Thanks, Mark.
Okay, Paul. Thanks very much.
Cheers now. Bye.